betrayal. There are layers of proven conspiracy and alleged conspiracy that will disturb you. You will learn much in these pages, and the experience, I believe, will advance your understanding of our country and how Abraham Lincoln's murder changed it forever. This book is a departure from the contemporary nonfiction I've written for more than a decade and from the daily news analysis that I do on TV. But the lessons you will learn within these pages are relevant to all our lives. For those of us who want to improve the United States and keep it the greatest nation in the world, we must be aware of the true heroes who have made the country great, as well as the villains who have besmirched it. Finally, this audiobook will be read as a thriller, but don't let the style fool you. What you are about to hear is unsanitized and uncompromising. It is a no-spin American story, and I am proud of it. Prologue. Saturday, March 4th, 1865, Washington, D.C. The man with 6 weeks to live is anxious. He furrows his brow, as he does countless times each day, and walks out of the Capitol building, which is nearing completion. He is exhausted, almost numb. 50,000 men and women stand in the pouring rain and ankle-deep mud to watch President Lincoln take the oath of office to begin his second term. His new vice president, Andrew Johnson, has just delivered a red-faced, drunken, 20-minute ramble vilifying the South, and that has left the crowd squirming and embarrassed by Johnson's inebriation. So when Abraham Lincoln steps up to the podium and delivers an eloquent appeal for reunification, the spiritual message of his second inaugural address is all the more uplifting. With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us, to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations, the president intones humbly. Despite his exhaustion, Lincoln is charismatic, and momentarily energized. Suddenly the sun bursts through the clouds as he speaks, its light enveloping the tall and outwardly serene Lincoln. But 120 miles away in the Virginia Railroad Junction of Petersburg, any thought of serenity is a fantasy. The Confederate Army, under the command of General Robert E. Lee, has been pinned inside the city for more than 250 days by Union forces under the command of General Ulysses S. Grant. Though living in trenches and reduced to eating rats and raw bacon, Lee's men will not surrender. Instead, Lee is making plans to slip out of Petersburg and escape south to the Carolinas. If he succeeds, Lincoln's prayer for a reunified United States of America may never be answered. America will continue to be divided into a North and a South, a United States of America and a Confederate States of America. Lincoln's inaugural speech is a performance worthy of a great dramatic actor. And indeed, one of America's most famous thespians stands just a few feet away as Lincoln raises his right hand. John Wilkes Booth is galvanized by the president's words, though not in the way Lincoln intends. Booth, 26 years old, raised in Maryland, is an exceptional young man. Blessed with a rakish smile and a debonair gaze, he is handsome, brilliant, witty, charismatic, tender, and able to bed almost any woman he wants, and he has bedded quite a few. It's no wonder that the actor has known success on the Broadway stage. His fiancée stands at his side, a sensual young woman whose senator father has no idea that his daughter is secretly engaged to a man of Booth's lowly theatrical calling. Lucy Hale and John Wilkes Booth are a beautiful young couple, quite used to the adoration of high society and the opposite sex. Yet not even she knows that Booth is a Confederate sympathizer, one who nurses a pathological hatred for Lincoln and the North. Lucy has no idea that her lover has assembled a crack team of conspirators to help bring down the president. They have guns, financing, and a precise plan. At this point, patience is their watchword. Standing in the cold Washington drizzle in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, Booth feels nothing but hot rage and injustice. The actor is impulsive and prone to the melodramatic. Just before Lincoln's speech, as the president stepped out onto the